our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
The only thing I really knew about Wilson Ramos coming into the season is you don't go to Venezuela with him.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm that version of Batman.
We don't want to know about your roleplay, Justin.
Yes, you do.
I think they call this battered fantasy analyst syndrome.
No, domestic abuse is only funny when it's happening to Justin.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm going to film the whole thing and see if I either make my fortune or I just end up dead.
Remember when Alan Craig was a monster? Now he's, like, dead even though he's only 30? What the hell happened to that guy?
Like, the White Sox know what the fuck they're doing.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 117 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on the Thursday podcast is Eli Rosenzweig and Chuck Anderson. Eli, how you doing?
Fantastic. What about you?
I am pretty fucking exhausted. I'm very, very tired.
I feel like you make that same excuse every podcast. It's getting old at this point, Justin.
Yeah, I've been up for like 24 straight hours on just a few hours of sleep. And so for those of you who point out the fact when I'm tired that I say you know a lot, I will be saying you know a whole bunch, I'm sure, today, because I'm just absolutely fucking exhausted right now. But we also have Chuck Anderson joining us. Chuck, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I feel like the question should be, how are you? Like, just following following your Twitter feed and different stuff going on, I have this picture of you, like, all bandaged up like a mummy and, like, perhaps on your deathbed or something. So I'm always glad to hear you sounding healthy, at least.
Well, so far, so good. Yeah, in the last, like, 2 weeks, I've had multiple hip MRIs, a brain MRI. I had a breathing test yesterday. Things are going really well in the Mason household. And for those of you who live in California and know what Kaiser medical insurance is, they are now asking you at every visit, no matter who you are, whether you're being abused in your home. And so I'm having like appointments left and right where I'm coming in like, you know, in serious like physical with serious physical problems, and they continuously ask me if I'm being beaten at home by my wife.
You don't want to wish.
We don't want to know about your role play, Justin.
Yes, you do. Thankfully, we have a guest on today. It's our dear friend, Scott Bogman, from the In This League Podcast Network. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing good. What's going on, boys?
Just another day in paradise.
I'm just wondering, if you're Batman. Like, is that why you never get any sleep? You're at the doctor. He's asking if you're abused, and he probably says you can't go hella skiing.
I am the Batman in the Dark Knight movie, the one with the Joker, where the guy dresses up as Batman and is trying to like copycat him. And he's
not out here in hockey pads.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy.
You know, he gets tied up. He's like 300 pounds, and yeah, that's I'm that version of Batman.
Well, Batman is probably the only guy that could physically abuse you. So I don't know what Kaiser Soze out there is asking you for.
I completely disagree. My wife does beat me. I'm just too afraid to report her.
Thank God. Thank God that's happening from somebody. You were sounding too confident there for a while. So
I think they call this battered fantasy analyst syndrome or something.
Boy, we are offensive early.
Yeah. Well, it's not nearly as bad as last episode where I had to cut a bunch of stuff. So,
well, if you had to do that, it must have been really bad.
Yeah. Scott, why don't you tell people kind of where you could reach on Twitter and then what you guys do over at ITL?
Yeah, you can find me on the Twitter machine at Bogman Sports. InThisLeague.com is our website where the Welsh and I host a slew of fantasy podcasts. We have baseball, football, NBA, and I even do college fantasy football. I'm a masochist. So we got all the information for you. It's a lot like what the guys do here. You know, we got articles and stuff, too. We got all the fun stuff. So just another thing to check out. You guys should go check it out.
If you had all the fun stuff, you'd be doing WNBA podcasts, but you're not. So
You know what? It's on the list. I was just I asked you if you wanted to co-host with me, and you turned me down. So it's just tough finding another co-host.
I can't cheat on Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
No, go right ahead. I totally want to hear you talk about the WNBA.
Yeah, I mean, see, there we go. Two hosts for it now. Mm-hmm. So
if you guys had you a just... Bachelorette podcast, he'd be all over it.
Oh my God, yes, I would.
Well, that's sad.
But definitely go check out all the podcasts over at In This League. I especially like the college fantasy football podcast. I was even in the college fantasy football listener league you guys had last year and did surprisingly well. And it really helped me kind of bone up a little bit for the rookies coming in for the coming into the NFL this year. So I actually really, really enjoyed that one. I know that one doesn't get as much pub as the other ones, but I really enjoyed that one.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's we're doing more this year for that one. So we're doing conference previews, and that's actually after I'm done with this. I got a interview with someone from ASU to talk about the Pac-12. So yeah, we're up on that one. We got football going. We just did mock draft 2.0, where you can hear the Welsh and I being sniped all the time. So we're deep in it. Middle of baseball, we got all of it rolling.
Now, I apologized on a previous episode because I was supposed to be in that mock draft 2.0. Did I as an auto drafter snipe you guys?
I'm sure you did a couple times. You know, the team wasn't that bad.
No,
but it was the old.
Well, I have my pre-draft rank set up. You know?
Did you? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah. That was. I was like, man, this is actually okay. Because usually you see, you know, they draft two kickers or. Three quarterbacks or three defenses or something weird. None of that happened, so that was nice.
Yeah, and once again, apologize.
You didn't take Gostkowski in the fifth round. You weren't on the Adam rank, you know.
I was in a mock draft for Rotomag magazine. You know, I won't go too far into this because this is obviously a baseball one. But they had us. Talk about each one of our picks and why we made that pick. And I got to like kicker and defense, and I was like, I don't fucking know,
because I had to.
Yeah, I mean, I have to make the pick, so that's why I did what I did.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and jump right into our list of players we're going to discuss. As we were recording our podcast for the Wednesday show, Yu Darvish was being placed on the DL on Monday. And that was kind of screwing every fantasy owner that kind of had him because he went on there right after, like, lineups locked. Scott, what are your thoughts on Yu Darvish the rest of the season? Are you worried about this DL stint? Are you worried about him making it through the year?
I'm like a 6 out of 10 worried about him going on this DL stint. You know, I know the MRI showed nothing significant, which is nice, and I think it's all just Texas Rangers paranoia. I mean, the dude's coming off of Tommy John surgery. He's their best pitcher. They got to make sure he's okay. They don't want to screw around with it. But I think you have to start anytime any pitcher goes on the DL, you just have to start at a 5 out of 10. Are they going to make it through the rest of the year? And then once he works his way back, I think he'll be fine. There's going to be some type of innings limit, so I don't know if they're going to skip him starts or if they're going to just shut him down at some point. But I feel like you got to be worried about Darvish finishing the season, especially if anything else happens. They may just be like, you know what, we're just done with this. And especially if they fall out of it. If they fall out of it, I mean, they might as well just shut him down and wait for next season. So,
yeah, I think the only way they shut him down is if you're right, if they fall out of it. I think they're a team that expects to kind of compete for the, you know, AOS title, and
they are right now.
Mm-hmm. And so I mean, I would assume that they'll skip starts or, you know, or pull them early from starts, things like that. It was one of the reasons I talked about when we first talked about him when he came back, that I was going to, you know, if I had any shares of Yu Darvish, which I don't, I would try to sell immediately. Like, I would try to just get is whatever I could at the time. You know, because of either re-injury, because I didn't feel like he was guaranteed, you know, a major amount of innings coming off of Tommy John surgery. So, you know, I think right now you have to hold him, you know, until he gets through. You can't just sell him right now because the value's too low. But let him come back. Hopefully he's not gone for too long. Get a good start or two under his belt and then try to sell him because, yeah, I do not believe in the longevity of this season for him. Eli, how are you feeling about Yu Darvish?
You know, it's fair to worry that this could be kind of a lost year for him, but I'm optimistic. He looked good in his three starts coming off the DL, and you know, he's just going to miss a couple starts here. I just think the Rangers are being cautious. They have a really nice cushion in the AL West, or I think like six games up in the division. Their offense has been fantastic. They can afford missing a couple starts here. I just think he's such a good strikeout guy that you got to go out and get him if you can. There's just so much upside there. Everyone's struggling with pitching. People who have Darvish are probably really frustrated at this point because they, you know, he missed, what, a couple months, and then it looks like you got him back and you lose him again. So I think this is just a short-term thing. I'm buying.
Chuck, how are you feeling on Yu Darvish? Are you buying or selling?
Well, in yearly leagues, in redraft leagues, I think, you know, if you need a huge jolt in the arm, I think you have to buy and hope that he, you know, that the early signs, which were good. I mean, he was about what we expected, maybe even a little bit better when he came off for these few starts that he had. I think there's a weird backdrop here, though, if you're looking anything beyond this year, and that's that we have a very small sample size of Asian pitchers coming over. And when they were 16, 17, 18 years old, they were already throwing 150, 160 pitch starts. And I think that long term, you have to be really, really concerned about this and how much it stinks that he's still pretty young. And we basically have lost almost a full year and a half from Darvish. In what was left of his prime. I can't believe he's going to pitch very deep into his 30s. So I have long-term fears for him, but I would buy him for this year if you need a huge pitching jolt and you can get him on the cheap.
Well, Scott, I got a question for you because I know you play in a lot of head-to-head leagues, head-to-head formats.
Yes.
And I'm more of a roto guy myself, though. I mean, I'm playing in a few more head-to-head leagues this year. Does the head-to-head format versus a roto format change your opinion of him for this year?
It does, just because I'm afraid of the flat-out shutdown. So if he gets shut down and you need him for the playoffs, you're pretty screwed. But if you can get him for roto and have him help you, you know, it's the same in the middle of the year as it is at the end of the year for roto. So I would much rather have him in a roto format than I would in a head-to-head, because I am afraid of the out-and-out shutdown.
And I think that's really, really good advice. And I think if I'm in a head-to-head format, I'm even a little bit more scared than I already am in a roto format. Let's go ahead and move on over to some kind of news that broke just a little while ago here on Wednesday afternoon. And that's Jose Reyes was designated for assignment by the Colorado Rockies. You know, this isn't completely shocking considering how well Trevor Story has played this year, but does that mean he is droppable? Does that mean another team is going to go out and get him? Eli, what are your thoughts on Jose Reyes fantasy-wise rest of the season?
I'm not very interested in that. I wouldn't even be shocked if he didn't get signed. This is such a stigma to this guy right now. He's not going to be in Coors Field. That hurts his value. You know, his main assets is his speed. How much is he going to run at this point after a long layoff and being 33 years old? I just don't think he's worth stashing despite being eligible to come back from the suspended list whenever he gets picked up. I guess if you're desperate, you can go out and get him, but I wouldn't go out and get him until someone actually signs him, which is not exactly a guarantee at this point.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jose Reyes going forward?
Well, I think someone is going to take a chance on him. It's kind of curious to think about what teams it might be. I mean, Eli probably doesn't want to hear this, but it sure seems like the White Sox have been doing a lot of finagling around shortstop now.
No, Anderson's job now. I don't see it.
Well, I'm just saying that they'd certainly need some infield depth that they don't have, especially with now that they DFA'd Jimmy Rollins. So I think somebody's going to take a chance on him. I think middle infield has been a little bit better than a lot of years, recent years, to me. So to me, it seems like you're going to have to be in a large league, and you're going to have to be in a jam to want to take a chance on someone who's basic skill set has really been declining in the last couple of years, but he was a fantasy mainstay. And you're going to see him get picked up in a lot of leagues where maybe all the owners aren't as up to date as we are, just because of name value, I think.
Scott, are you picking up Jose Reyes, or are you kind of in Eli and Chuck's camp?
I'd rather have Brad Miller.
That's a great inside joke that no one else is going to get.
No, I'm not. I'm with Eli and Shaka. I'm not messing with Jose Reyes until he gets signed. Who knows when and if that's going to happen. I just, I'm saying, you know, domestic abuse is only funny when it's happening to Justin. So no one's, I have a hard time seeing somebody signing this guy and saying, well, you know, we need him. I mean, you have to be really desperate to pick up a guy in his situation. So,
you know,
I just don't see it.
I agree with you that you have to be desperate, but I disagree that no one's going to do it. I mean, we saw the Yankees trade for Chapman, you know, even before.
But Chapman's good, you know. I mean,
that's different.
I don't think it's much different as far as the situation goes, but it's just different because, I mean, nobody else in the league throws 103 on a constant basis. If Jose Reyes was out there stealing 60 to 70 bases a year, then he would get signed immediately. He probably would have never been DFA'd. They would have put him in the outfield or something. But he's just not the same guy he used to be.
Yeah, I still think – I don't think he's going to – you know, because the Rockies have 10 days to trade him away or he becomes a free agent. So I don't think anybody trades for him because, one, you know, the contract I believe is still fairly large. But if someone can go out and get him for cheap after he kind of clears waivers and no one puts a claim on him, I think there are teams that are going to go after him. There's two teams in particular that I talked with the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast a couple weeks ago when I was on with them that I kind of mentioned and I still believe. One originally was the White Sox, but now with Tim Anderson being up, I don't believe the White Sox will necessarily do that. But the two teams that I think are still in play would be the Mets, who have had Reyes before, and he was a love figure for the Mets. They could use some, you know, shortstop help or third base help. You know, move Flores over to third, put Jose Reyes at short, and then the Baltimore Orioles. You know, they're playing Manny Machado at shortstop. They've got just a gaping hole at third base. They could move Machado back over to third, put Reyes. And have a kind of the top of the order kind of guy that they don't necessarily really have right now, you know, in their current lineup for a lot of the big mashers. You know, obviously Reyes's skills have declined over the last few years, but in a very short sample, 9 games in AAA, hit 2 home runs, hit .303, .425, .485, and had 3 stolen bases. You know, I mean, those are good numbers. It's AAA, it's a hitter's park in Albuquerque. But the guy still has some game. You know, he had a decent season last year, 7 home runs, the 24 stolen bases between, you know, two teams. So I think he still has skill. Teams are willing to look past guys, especially guys who've already served their suspension. I mean, how many guys who've been suspended for steroids or, you know, have gotten another shot at the major league level in spite of that and gotten huge contracts at the major league level in spite of that? So I'm not necessarily out on Reyes. I think in a 15-team mix, if I've got room on my bench to stash him in NL or AL only, I'll pick him up in stash him depending on where he ends up, or pick him up and play him. No problem. I think by the end of the year, we may be talking about him being 12-team mixed worthy.
Well, does anybody think that he could get picked up like by a team like the A's that tries to build up his value and then flip him later? You know, it just seems like the kind of thing that a team that doesn't have a lot to lose might try and do, because he's going to be very, after this 10-day period, he's going to be very cheap to pick up. You're only going to have to eat the major league minimum of, you know, of his salary the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. I will be stunned if he does not play for at least one major league team yet this year. That would stun me, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think in 10 days he's on a major league roster. That would be my prediction. And I don't know if a team like Oakland would do that, though it would make sense. I'm going to bet he signs with a team that's a competitor, a team like Baltimore, a team like the Mets, a team like Chicago, the White Sox, even though, like I said, Anderson's up now. But, I mean, like the White Sox know what the fuck they're doing. They just traded for James Shields.
Oh, come on. That was still a good deal. I know he's been disastrous, but they're not paying him that much. Like, come on. An innings eater for $9 million a year?
That's, a starting shortstop for league minimum.
Who would you rather have the rest of the way, Tim Anderson or Jose Reyes? I'm taking Tim Anderson.
Rest of the way, not including future years, I'm taking Jose Reyes.
No.
I will make a board bet with you right now that Jose Reyes outproduces Tim Anderson in a 5x5 league.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy on the list. That is John Lester, who has been pitching like a stud this year. So he, according to the ESPN Player Rater, he's the fifth overall starting pitcher or fifth overall pitcher this year. You know, he's been a stud for a long time. Would you consider him a top five guy going forward, or you try to sell high on him, Scott?
I don't know if he's a top five guy. You know, he's going to come back to earth a little bit. But he doesn't have any weird splits. The only, you know, looking over his analytics and all that stuff, the only thing I could find is, you know, he's got a 1.89 ERA and his xFIP is hovering right around 3.16. But he's a strikeout per inning guy. He doesn't walk many. I think, like any other starting pitcher, he'll have some good starts and some bad starts going the rest of the way, but way more good than bad. I think he's just relishing in, you know, his catcher, David Ross's last year. So I like John Lester going forward. I don't know if he's top five, but he's probably a top 10 guy.
Chuck, top five guy for you, top 10 guy. Are you trying to acquire him if you can, or would you try to sell him right now?
Well, I think I would try to sell him just because he's outperforming, you know, almost all of his career peripherals, and he's, you know, 32 years old. I think things have been going so well in Chicago. You have to decide if you think it can go this well the whole rest of the year, or if you think there might be some turbulence at some point. And some of the numbers I saw, you know, he's allowing a 556 OPS, and his career OPS allowed is 684. That's a huge, huge dip. The other one is, you know, he's holding opponents to a 260 BABIP, which seems a little low. It's also, you know, quite a bit lower than his career BABIP allowed. So, I mean, a lot of the other numbers do fall in line. So I know where Bogman's coming when he says that. But I think things are going a little bit too well. If I could get, you know, if I could get somebody I like that was a top 20 starter, I would trade Lester for Lester for Kluber right now. No questions asked. I still think Kluber has more upside. And I think Lester is outperforming even his relatively lofty standards.
All right, Eli, are you all in on Lester, or are you selling right now?
I think you got to consider selling. I like that Kluber suggestion. I was thinking kind of the same thing. It's more of like a top 10, top 12 guy. It does seem like he's been getting a little lucky in the BABIP and the strand rate departments, but he still is what he always is, a great fantasy two starter. It's great to pitch to the National League and for the best team in baseball, basically. You know, innings eater, bunch of Ks, bunch of wins. He's about as safe as it gets, so if you don't want to sell high, it's perfectly reasonable just holding on to him and have him kind of help anchor your staff.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you guys. I think if I could get, you know, I don't necessarily know if I'd want to trade him straight up for Kluber, but if I could get Kluber in a piece, if I could get Strasburg in a piece, if I could get Cueto in a piece, you know, one of those guys in a small piece, I think I would do that in a heartbeat. You know, he is on the best team in baseball, and I can't remember who said it. I think it might have been Scott who said, you know, got to wait for that time in which things are all going to fall apart. And then that's the playoffs because it's the Cubs. So, you know, let's be honest. You know, as soon as the playoff time comes around, the GOAT reappears, Bartman comes out of hiding, and, you know, and that's when everything falls apart. So I don't have a problem riding with Lester. I just kind of wanted to see where everybody's kind of ranking was for him rest of the season.
If Bartman sees his shadow, it's 100 more years of no World Series, right?
No person has ever gotten a RAR deal in the history of sports than Steve Bartman.
I'm going to have to agree with that.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Eli's favorite catcher in the entire world right now, and that's Wilson Ramos, who's having just kind of a resurgence, a breakout year. you know, kind of what we thought we'd see from him a few years ago when he was starting to tear things up in Washington. Eli, is this finally the breakout we've been expecting from Wilson Ramos?
I don't know. This is crazy. I mean, he's a 265 career hitter. Now he's hitting 333. He's never hit more than 16 homers. He's on pace for 25. He's never had 70 RBIs. He's on pace for 90, scoring a bunch of runs. I know he's got an injury rep, but he did play most of last year. I still think I think you got to sell high. I love this guy, but he's having way too good of a season right now. There's no way he can keep this up, and maybe he does get hurt. I do like that his walk rate's at a career high and his strikeout rate's at a career low, so some of this makes some sense to me. He's swinging at fewer balls and swinging and missing less than ever, but the BABIP is too high. Things are just going too well. I think you got to trade him and see what you can get.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, his triple slash line right now, 333, 382, 557. That's insane. The extremely high BABIP. I mean, there are things to like. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, it's not like he's on pace for, you know, 40 home runs. I mean, you know, right now he's on pace for, what, probably like 23, 24 home runs. That's, you know, pretty sustainable. But I think the average in the rates may crash at some point. And if I, you know, if I could get a pretty penny for him, if there's someone who's buying into everything, then yeah, I think I probably would sell him. Scott, what about you? Are you buying, selling Wilson Ramos right now?
I think with most catchers, I would sell if I could get something back from a catcher, unless I'm in a two catcher deep league for some reason. I'm 90% of the time I'm going to sell. The only thing I really knew about Wilson Ramos going into the season is you don't go to Venezuela with him. that's like really the only thing I knew about him. I think I would probably sell him. I mean, he's had a career high in a bunch of stuff like contact rate and walk rate and career low and strikeout rate. A swinging strike rate is a career low. I feel like this is going to come down at some point. And if he returns to normal Wilson Ramos, it's, you know, all come crashing down. So no thanks. I'm out. So
all right, Chuck, would sell. Chuck, are you going to Venezuela with Wilson Ramos?
I think there was nothing else in my life I would rather do. I'm going to film the whole thing and see if I either make my fortune or I just end up dead.
Just make sure you're friends with Denzel Washington first, because the last Ramos that got kidnapped on his watch, he avenged. So,
man. Well, my thing about Wilson Ramos is, you know, I mean, the stat that jumps off is a 342 BABIP so far this year, which is just, you know, for a guy who runs like him, is just seems like pure insanity. His batting average is 100 points up versus righties over how he's hit righties for the last 3 years. He has only hit 211 over the last 7 days, which is obviously small sample size, but might be a trend. The other thing I really noticed is that I went back and I tracked his career, and he's a guy who, when he has played in the second half of the season, he's always slowed down. My biggest problem with Wilson Ramos, and part of the reason why I brought him up for the show with you guys, is that I own him in a two-catcher 14-team league where I got him for $3 at the end of an auction, and I could keep him next year for $6. And I'm fighting the urge to trade him, because if the LASIK surgery that he had before the year is some of what's going on or what have you, in that deep of a league, it just seems like Wilson Ramos could have a lot of value going forward. Now, there's a late blooming catcher theory that we've heard for years and years and years, etc. So, you know, in a league like that, it's really hard to decide what to do with Wilson Ramos, I think.
Well, Yadi was kind of one of those guys. Like, you know, I mean, probably earlier than Ramos, but he was mainly a defensive guy for a long time before he started hitting.
Yeah, Wilson Ramos is only 28 years old, too. I mean, I think people have this idea that he's even older than that, maybe just because he's a bulky guy. But, you know, I mean, he's going to wear down in the second half, and he's not going to hit like this. I think we all agree.
That's all catchers, yeah.
Yeah, but the weird thing is that, okay, like, catcher has been so bad, and Wilson Ramos has been so good. Like, Wilson Ramos and Jonathan Lucroy and Buster Posey, like, everything else has been basically a dumpster fire almost, you know, straight down the line for catchers. So the question becomes, you know, how much value does a guy like Wilson Ramos have going forward? Is he a top five guy next year if he just tapers off instead of falls off the rest of the way? Yeah, one's got to almost think he's a top five catcher next year.
Can we return to how the hell did Bogman remember that Ramos was the last name of the girl in Man on Fire?
I love Man on Fire.
Because that was fantastic.
You're welcome, Eli. I'm really glad I could help you out there. No, I love Man on Fire. Pizza Ramos.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Is that the best Denzel movie?
No, Training Day.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. I think Man on Fire is in contention.
Wait, which one?
Isn't it Crimson Tide? The submarine one?
Yeah.
Denzel and Gene Hack.
There's been a ton of great Denzel movies. I mean, I don't think Man on Fire is necessarily a top five one.
Man on Fire is probably my number one seed. I love that movie.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah,
don't forget the Book of Eli, loosely based on my life.
I really like that one.
I think, Chuck, in the two catcher 14 man league, you got to hold on to Ramos.
Yeah.
Especially if you can keep him for six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so if you don't want to be featured for Chris Iannetta next year, like that. No thanks.
So. Yeah, I think you're holding on to him in a two catcher league. I mean, unless you're getting just an absolute killing, and you feel like that puts you over the top this year. I mean, I'm all about if something puts me over the top this year, or I feel like something's going to put me over the top this year, I'll sell my firstborn child. I mean, that's no problem. Like, you know, I know she has potential for later on in life. But, I mean, I won a championship this year.
Yeah, well, I have another variable in that league. I have Tommy Joseph, who's a guy we haven't really extensively talked about. I have Tommy Joseph, who's catcher eligible this year, and Nick Hundley. So if Nick Hundley turns it back on, which he doesn't seem like he's been himself since the injuries, then all of a sudden I'm going to have to see exactly what I could get for Ramos in that league if a team has no catcher at all, as I am in second place. So just interesting. There's a lot of interesting variables, and I thought it was interesting to try and gauge Wilson Ramos right now with whatever we want to call the breakout resurgence of him.
So, Blakeman talked about Ramos for way too long. Can we move on?
Ramos and Denzel Washington, we've had a lot of analysis.
Yeah, before the end of the podcast, I'm pulling up IMDb, and we're going to do a kind of a ranking of Denzel Washington movies. Let's go ahead and move on to a guy that's kind of near and dear to Chuck's heart, because he plays for the Brewers, and I mean, how often do we get to talk about guys who play on the Brewers? And that's Zach Davies. I put him on the list, one, because I absolutely just shit all over him on the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast. And then he goes and throws like seven innings of no-hit ball against the A's and has another good start since then. Chuck, you're the Brewers homer. Tell us about Zach Davies. Are you buying or selling what he's kind of putting up right now?
Well, it would be an awfully nice piece moving forward for the Brewers if he could fill in the, you know, a number three. I would think three is a stretch, but if he could fill in the number four or the number five spot long term. I mean, he's only 23 years old. You know, his FIP is higher than his ERA, which his ERA for the year isn't really all that glimmering either. He's just had a really nice stretch right now. You know, his base on ball and his K rates are both only slightly better than they were last year. You know, I don't think it's a major buy opportunity for people, because, you know, his 7.2 strikeouts per nine is kind of what, you know, all of his numbers indicate that he's going to be that kind of guy. So, you know, I mean, I think it's, as a Brewer fan, it's unbelievable that they got him for a 2-month rental of Gerardo Parra. I mean, so, and he looks like he might be the best young pitcher, you know, besides Jimmy Nelson on that team right now. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things to say about him from a real life standpoint, but I don't think there's much of a long-term buying opportunity with his only being 23, he's still going to have some turbulence, and the fact that he's going to be on a Brewer team that's going to be rebuilding and is going to hold down his run support over the next couple years.
Scott, are you buying or selling on Zach Davies?
I don't know if I would say I'm buying on Zach Davies, but I like what he's done recently, and he's gotten better as the year goes on. You know, his April was an 8.78 ERA, May was 3.81, and his June is 0.86. So he seems to be getting better. Also, another weird kind of split for him was his home ERA is 2.88 over 50 innings pitched, and his away ERA is 7.82, but he's only had 12.2 innings pitched on the road. So it's kind of hard to figure Zach Davies right now, but I think he's worth adding as a streamer. And as soon as he blows up, you know, ditch him and, you know, grab somebody else. He's one of those guys. He also looks like he's 12 years old. I don't know if you guys have seen his picture, but
I have not, but I'll definitely have to go check him. I watched him pitch against the A's, and is impressive. The stat line, showed, I think it was more of a matter of the A's just being awful than really him being that impressive. I don't think he's that great of a pitcher. I agree with Chuck. I think he's a future four in the Milwaukee rotation, which, you know, it's not like that's a, you know, huge, you know, rotation to kind of cut into. He's got, you know, four kind of average to, you know, I don't even want to call any of them above average pitches. I just don't think he's that impressive. I think if he rode the hot streak recently, I'd be ready to jump off pretty quickly. Playing in Milwaukee, he allows the ball to go into the air way too much. I wish he was more of a ground ball guy, and I'm just not seeing it right now. I think that home park is going to kill him at some point. Eli, what are your thoughts on Zach Davies?
Well, I buy that he's better than Kyle Davies was, but that's not really saying much.
You know what? I literally brought up his page as Chuck was talking on accident, and I was all like, holy shit, this guy's 32?
Yeah. Yeah, Davies doesn't excite me very much. Bad place to pitch, not a good team. The walk rate's decent, strikeout rate's decent. I don't know. I know he's been good the last three starts, but before that he had a hard time going deep into games. I think he's just a streamer, and maybe 16 teams or plus I'm maybe looking to add him, probably not. He doesn't have much of a prospect pedigree. He's someone to monitor, but I'm not all that excited. He's got to show me a little bit more than this for me to be interested.
Yeah, and I think you can only really start him on the road. I mean, that he's going to have problems at the home in the home park, like I was alluding to earlier. Let's move on to a guy who's a little bit more exciting, and that's Deho Lee of the Seattle Mariners, who just seems to only hit home runs. I mean, dude has just got some power, and he's fun as fuck to watch. And if you're into bat flips, go watch some of his YouTube videos of his bat flips while he was in Korea. Absolutely amazing. Scott, is Deho Lee worth a pickup right now?
I think he is right now just because he's hitting 364, but the dude has some weird, weird splits. You would think he would be awful against lefties, but he's really not. He has more homers against lefties than he does righties. 279 with six bombs, and 319 with four bombs against righties. But he's got some really weird splits here. At home versus lefties, he's 324. Home versus righties, 214. Away versus lefties, 222. Away versus righties, 474. Just strange, weird splits. I mean, he's definitely worth adding right now, though, because he's hit 364 over the month of June. Why not, you know, if a home run hitter gets hot, that's when you want to add him. Because home run hitter guys like Deho Lee tend to be pretty damn streaky. So I would add him right now, and then once it cools off, dump him and add somebody else.
Eli, do you agree with Scott?
Yeah, I think that is pretty much where I'm thinking. I want to say good things about him because maybe our female Korean listeners will like me. I may or may not have a thing for Korean women.
Asian fetish.
He strikes out too much. He's got 10 homers and zero doubles. Is that even possible? He doesn't seem to be playing every day. Maybe that's going to change. I don't know. Just monitor him. Like Scott said, add him while he's hot and then dump him if he starts sucking and not playing. But more of an AL-only guy for me right now, I think, based on playing time.
If I may be reading his splits a little bit wrong, but like Scott said, like his splits are just really, really weird. According to this, in his batted ball splits for the season, he has 11 flies and 10 home runs.
I'm just waiting for that double, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's got one single off a fly.
I want to see him on base.
Yeah, he's got one single off a fly ball. Well, he's a big dude. He may not be able to actually run to second on his own. And 10 home runs on 11 fly balls. Obviously, that's going to correct itself, but I think you got to ride the streak right now. I think he's a really interesting DFS play, too, because he's more of a guy that his price is never going to be extremely high, considering he tends to platoon with Adam Lind as it is. So he's a guy that ride the streak for right now, but I don't expect any of this change. It's not like he was a young, you know, guy coming over. He's 33 years old. He's going to be 34 in a few days. So I'm not necessarily buying on this for long term, but if he's available, I picked him up in, I think, two leagues just to kind of ride the hot streak on, and it's been nice so far.
He's on pace for 25 homers and 41 runs. That's tough to do.
Yeah. And he can't be on pace for, you know, very many at-bats either. So
not a lot of doubles either.
Chuck, any thoughts on Dae-Ho Lee?
Well, I guess I'm trying to understand better why, you know, when I look at his splits, it says to me that he's outperformed Adam Lind, and he's had 50 less at-bats than Adam Lind has had. So I'm wondering why they're still platooning. I would be really interested to see if they stop platooning for a while, if he looks like he's exposed by that, or if he actually looks like he'd be all right. Because overall, you know, as odd as his splits are with where it's happening, overall he's hitting righties and lefties right now, and that's something no one has ever basically said about Adam Lind. You know, Adam Lind is not very fast. He's not a good first baseman. I mean, I guess they're both older players, and I see that. But I would be watching very closely to see if he starts playing regularly, because in most formats, it's awfully frightening to start a guy for a whole week if you only know if he's going to start, you know, three times that week. But if he were to start playing more, which he should be playing more, if he starts playing more and playing almost every day, then all of a sudden, I think you really got to pique your interest and you got to see what's going on there, because Seattle's offense is way better than I thought it was going to be as a generality this year. There's more depth in that lineup than I thought there was going to be.
Whenever you remove Brad Miller from your offense, it just improves.
Yeah, even if you replace him with Ketel Marte.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm looking. I don't think I've ever really seen Lee play any defense personally, but looking over his metrics, there's nothing like that screams to me that he's, you know, any worse than Adam Lind is. So, I mean, he doesn't have any errors on the season, I don't believe. So, I mean, that's got to mean something, and I think you're right. If Adam Lind continues to be Adam Lind, and not we don't see any sort of power stroke regained from him, maybe they just decide that Lee is worth running out there for a while.
That would change everything in this equation for me. I mean, I'm tempted in a couple of deeper leagues that I have where we can make daily transactions to pick him up, because then I could only use him on the day that he plays, as long as I keep up on it. It's a lot of work to do that, but
that's what I've been doing.
Yeah,
I don't. Two leagues.
Yeah, and that's it's got to be working out really good for you lately. The other thing is, like, for me being in the Midwest, is like he's kind of hidden out in Seattle. I'm amazed he's available in every single league that I play in. So I don't know. It's just we run into that West Coast thing, you know. We're not the night owls that Justin is. Well, his wife's beating him up. So.
Just some breaking news that's just come in over my
phone. Let me guess, Joe DiMaggio just got a hit. Is that what you got to say?
Well, that was going to be one. Yeah, Joe DiMaggio just hit a home run off of Jim Bagby in the third inning. But also, Ichiro has just matched Pete Rose's all-time hit record if you combined his American and Japanese hit totals. So, just some breaking news that came over the phone, but Eli just ruined one of them. So, thanks a lot, Dave.
That was my goal.
let's move on to Ian Kennedy, who you know, has struggled a little bit, but had a nice, pretty decent start here a few days ago. You know, he was a guy that I was really kind of interested to see how he would pitch in Kansas City, it being a nicer park. But it hasn't gone quite as planned, you know, so far this season. Is this a guy to kind of buy low on, or are you dropping him, Eli?
I don't think I'm going to drop him. He's averaged 11 wins and 190 strikeouts the last 2 years, and that was on bad teams. He's always been underappreciated. I think now he's on a good team. He's pitching fine. He's an innings eater. He's not going to hurt you in any category. He's just a safe guy in the middle of your rotation that you don't have to worry about, I feel like. I think you're being a little hard on him. He's been okay. ERA barely over four, a whip that doesn't hurt you, 66 Ks in 71 innings. I think he's fine. His metrics are basically in line with his career averages. I wouldn't cut him.
I don't know. I mean, the metrics are in at least my. Oh, I guess I was mistaken. His last outing was absolutely atrocious.
But
his FIP and XFIP are 5.14 and 4.66. The strikeouts have been okay, or a little bit better, as of late, except for the last outing. But I just really thought coming to Kansas City and where people drafted him, that he would get a little bit more production. I mean, he's got a walks per nine over three at this point, a 1.77 home run per nine. To me, things aren't going very well, and I'm getting pretty close to dropping him in the one league I have him in. Scott, am I being too hasty?
No, Ian Kennedy's obnoxious to own because he'll go through a month like he had in April where he has a 2.77 ERA, everything looks good, and then you'll get to June and he has a 9.26 ERA. And really the problem is he walks a lot or he'll get hit, and then he'll give up a gopher ball. He's really frustrating to have, like, at the end of the week where, you want to start, you have him in your rotation, you want to start him at the end of the week, and you're kind of teetering on ERA. Like, you can win ERA, you could lose ERA and whip, and you have Ian Kennedy. Do you really want to go with that guy? So I don't mind dropping him right now, but there will be another point in the season where he goes on another hot streak and he looks really good. But that's part of the frustration with Ian Kennedy. You just never know when it's going to come.
Chuck, are you buying Ian Kennedy, or are you willing to get rid of him as well?
I'm pretty willing to get rid of him. All the research that I did on Kennedy before the year started was telling me to really watch how he does on the road, because Kansas City is kind of a park that's built for his fly ball tendencies. And he's got a 5.44 road ERA, which I would not be willing to use him on a road, which means in weekly leagues, how often are you going to get two starts at our home starts for Ian Kennedy? He's one of the most baffling pitchers I can ever remember, because to start his career, I remember him pitching against the Brewers in the playoffs coming off a year where he just looked like he was going to be dynamite for years to come. So I agree. He's a very frustrating guy to own. I cannot really come up with what I consider to be a useful format for Kennedy. My distrust form is deep enough that if you're in leagues where, these Danny Duffy types, these people seem to be, coming on, where I would start taking chances on those guys instead of pretty much knowing that Ian Kennedy is going to relatively underperform for the rest of the year.
Chuck, you're adorable. The Brewers didn't make the playoffs.
They did. They beat the D-backs. Yeah. Ryan Braun was a giant cheater that year and got caught immediately after the playoffs with like horse steroids in his system or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Carlos Gomez.
I think it's kind of proven at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy who scored the winning run is playing in Mexico now.
Niger Morgan?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember
having
that.
A pretty good year in Mexico if I
Is he in your Mexican fantasy league, Justin?
He's a league leader in donkey shows.
Yeah, it's my Central American fantasy baseball league. My Panamanian pitching staff is doing really, really well. Let's move on to a guy who I thought at some point may end up in playing in Panama or somewhere like that, because it seemed like he was hurt and was never going to recover his form. But Brandon Moss has already hit 15 home runs this year. He's, hitting with a respectable .258 average, walking, enough to, give him a pretty decent OBP in OBP leagues. Is this the resurgence of Brandon Moss legit? Is it going to last, Eli?
Yeah, write him now, but I feel like you got to be prepared to have a backup plan or sell high before it's too late. That home run fly ball is just crazy. The homers are clearly driving all the value. Once those dip, he's going to hurt you in average. The K rate's high. The runs and RBIs will dip once the homers come back to life. So I'm trying to get rid of him now before it's too late, I feel like.
Chuck, are you getting rid of him?
I fear that if he levels off a little bit, I still see a logjam for playing time there and a lot of lefties in that lineup. It seems like they're not willing to give up on Matt Adams. And, you know, they have other lefties, you know, Carpenter, obviously, etc. I just think, you know, be excited while he's hot like this. If you didn't invest much in him, so be it. But if somebody's going to overvalue him and think he's going to perform like this, I would look to flip him.
Scott, are you looking to flip Brandon Moss, or are you riding it out as long as it's going to go?
I think I'd probably – you're not going to get anything for Brandon Moss. You know, he's White Devil Deho Lee. So just, you know, ride the hot streak while he's hot and then, you know, dump him. He's hitting 464 in June. Like you said, he's got the 14 bombs, 15 bombs, whatever it is. He's scoring runs. He's driving in runs. You know, get him while he's hot and then dump him.
Yeah, I just don't know what you can get for Brandon Moss that makes me think that selling him is really worth it right now. I mean, more than likely you didn't draft him as your first base option outside of anywhere other than maybe like NL only, like a 12-team NL only. And if you did right there, you're probably killing it in home runs right now. So maybe in that kind of depth of the league, I'm looking to sell him to a team that maybe needs some power. But, you know, in your 12-team mix, your 15-team mix, I mean, I can't imagine he was your original first base option. So you've probably got some depth below him. And if he doesn't pan out or pan out rest of the way, you're not really hurting that much. So I think I'm with Scott. I think I'm riding this out as long as it's going to go. And the Cardinals do have devil magic. They do seem to get things out of guys for, you know, later in their career, or guys that weren't, you know, premier prospects like Piscotty, like Grichuk, that end up, you know, producing a ton of value for their team. So,
or like Alan Craig. Remember when Alan Craig was a monster? Now he's like dead, even though he's only 30. What the hell happened to that guy?
He left St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
he joined one of the bad Boston clubhouses.
They're all bad.
let's talk about our next guy, and that's Marcus Stroman. Stroman was one of those guys that people were really, really high on coming into the season. I was one of those people. I bought into what we saw at the end of last year, coming back from the Achilles injury. And he just has not really done much this season worth anything, especially not worth his draft slot. Chuck, where are you on Marcus Stroman rest of the way?
Well, I don't think you're going to get, you know, the level of performance that you wanted to get out of Stroman for the rest of this year. You know, he does pitch in a really bad park. He's always been a dubious strikeout source to begin with. I just think maybe I would be trying to play off people that are overly frustrated with him in any league where I could keep him long term, because I think he's, you know, he's only 25 years old. I don't think the run support is going to, you know, go down to nothing in the years to come. So if some kind of dynasty format or some kind of keeper format, if you can get him for a good deal going forward for maybe the next couple of years, I like his chances. But this year, it just seems like people are pushing him a little bit too hard to come back, and, you know, people overdrafted him. So that frustration maybe means not a buying opportunity, but don't look for top 40 pitching stats the rest of the year. Be happy if you get top 60.
Scott, are you buying, you know, kind of low on Stroman right now, or are you kind of staying away from if you don't have him?
No, I think I would buy on Stroman. You know, like Chuck said, there's going to be a lot of people frustrated with Stroman, so it's an easier time to buy him right now. I think there's a chance that he could figure it out, especially since his xFIP is almost a run lower than his ERA at 3.82 to 4.76. So I think he's going to start getting it back and righting the ship a little bit. He gives up too many hits. You know, he doesn't walk a lot. He's only had one game with three and one with five and 14 starts. But he's giving up a lot of hits. He has eight or more hits in six of his 14 starts. So if he starts to use the zone a little bit better or whatever, I think he could get back on track here. But he is frustrating to own, which makes him easier to get right now. So I think I would buy on him if I could.
Eli, are you buying on Stroman?
Definitely buying. I view him as like a Sonny Gray type of guy. Just in terms of not a lot of strikeouts, but just a really smart pitcher, limits the walks. I know that's not the case with Gray this year, but I just think Stroman's been unlucky with the left on base percentage. And I think the FIP kind of shows that his ERA should be lower than it is. I don't care that he doesn't get the strikeouts. I like to load my pitching staff with the high strikeout relievers to kind of make up for guys like this. I definitely think that Stroman's too good, too talented to not buy low on.
Yeah, I'm buying low on him too. I think that I would be a little bit. I think there may be some pitching mix issues. I mean, I'm not seeing anything in his velocities necessarily that really scare me or anything, but he is throwing the slider a little bit less than he was before, or at least less than he did last year when he came back. So, you know, maybe he needs to throw it. Maybe it's just a matter of picks, Mitch. And he's, getting a little unlucky, a little bit higher BABIP than, last season. I think this is a guy that should revert back to, not back to necessarily what people thought they were going to get from him, but like Scott mentioned, his FIP and XFIP are almost a full run under his ERA. The offense should get going at some point, hopefully, in Toronto, give him a better chance for more wins. I think this is a guy that, if people are really kind of exacerbated by him, just been kind of crushing their rates, I think he's probably one of the best buy low options in terms of pitching right now. Let's go ahead and talk about Billy Burns. Eli was really upset because Billy Burns was on our Wednesday podcast kind of schedule. We ran a little bit long, didn't get a chance to talk about him, and he said that he had something very important to say about Billy Burns. So I'm just going to throw it to you, Eli.
Well, free Billy Burns now, Eli. Let's do it.
No, I just wanted to rip Burns because Mike has a huge fetish for stolen base guys that are incapable of hitting the baseball. So
he's third in contact percentage.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't like Billy Burns. He murders you. He murders you in two categories. He doesn't help you whatsoever in two others. Yeah, he's really good at steals, but big deal. Like now he's getting benched a bunch. He's batting at the bottom of the order. Like if you're a stolen base guy, you have to bat in the top of the order. Otherwise, you're just completely irrelevant. And he can't draw walks. You have to draw walks if you're a speed guy. Like what do these people not get? I don't like Billy Burns. He can go fuck himself.
I'm with you, but I don't think the problem is with Billy Burns. I think it was Bob Melvin. Billy Burns has been getting worse as the year goes along, but it's because they've been yanking him around and dicking him around in the lineup. He's hit first 30 times, 8 stolen bases, second 17 times, 4 stolen bases, and ninth 19 times, 0 stolen bases.
Well, so you're absolutely right. He's got a 284 OBP. You can't hit this guy first.
Well, he's hitting 258 when he's first, 236 second, and 211 at 9. So you can't hit him 9 either. Maybe you could leave him at 2 or something, but I think you just need to leave him at first and let him go. I mean, the guy is so fast that when he gets on base, he is stealing bases and he is scoring runs. So why not just let him lead off? I mean, what are you going to do, Coco Crisp the whole year? At what point does Coco Crisp get hurt?
I know their lineup isn't very good. They don't have a lot of options, but he's got a 600 OPS. He's just not very good.
My biggest issue, with Burns, and don't get me wrong, he's been disappointing, but the lineup around him is so bad. Like, the counting stats are never going to be there. They could bat him first, and he'd still only score about, 55, 60 runs this year. So
yeah, but he could get 40 swipes at first.
Yeah. But at what cost to your other stats? I mean, yes. If you're trying to accumulate stats everywhere, I guess in a head-to-head categories format, like that is like Billy Burns is bread and butter and really only place where he's extremely viable at this point. But if you're like in a roto, I mean, you're getting killed in average. You're getting killed in OBP. You're getting killed in RBI. He has 6 RBIs this year.
Yeah.
6. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. 27 runs is actually probably worse, for a guy who should be, scoring more runs as a speed guy. He's just, and unfortunately, I don't know if Eli or Scott said it, they're not playing him every day.
Yeah, he's getting...
No, yep, he's exactly. Not playing every day, and he's hit... I really think that he's one of those guys that would just be better in a defined role. If you want to hit him ninth, hit him ninth. If you want to hit him first, hit him first. But this dicking him around, this fucking Bob Melvin shit that he always does. Yeah, this month alone, he's hit ninth 4 times, first 3 times, second twice, and eighth once. Just pick one spot for him in the lineup and go, or bench him. Either way, use him as a pinch runner, but figure out what it is for him and let him do it.
I vote for the benching.
Well, I mean, you know, you wonder if they're
at least it's defined then, and we can all drop him. Yeah, you know, that's fine.
I wonder if they're just doing this until they can get some sort of trade interest in Crisp, and then maybe Billy Burns becomes a second half kind of buy. But I don't know what team is going to want to buy on Coco Crisp at this point. So.
Well, everyone always just assumes the White Sox are going to buy all these crappy veterans. So why not the West? They do. They actually could use Coco.
Austin,
to be honest.
Jackson is on the he's on the DL. So
Navis Garcia is still out in that outfield. Chuck, any thoughts on Billy Burns?
The only thought I have that you guys mentioned all the stats I had written down. He has no stolen bases since May 22nd. And there's nothing more frustrating than a guy who's got a 284 OBP, 6 RBIs, and has no stolen bases, which is the only thing that you drafted him for. I don't know I've been told that I'm way too impatient with my players, but if you have any options available, I don't know how you could be excited about owning Billy Burns in any way, shape, or form right now. And that is probably the ugliest offense. You could take that offense in its entirety, move it to AAA, and I don't really think anyone would know the difference. That's how bad that offense is.
I'm assuming the Rangers AAA team could beat the A's right now. Like in a 3-game series, Round Rock versus the Oakland A's, how many people do you think are actually taking the Oakland A's to win that series? I'm not. I mean,
Steven Vogt and Marcus Semien are not supposed to be your two best offensive players under any circumstances. I saw a list of ranking the general managers from Sporting News the other day, and they had Billy Bean at 18th. And I'm trying to figure out on what grounds they could do that.
You were the biggest Billy Bean hater, though.
It could not be. That team could not be any less functional. There's nothing functional about it. There's no trade value. There's
not even the bathroom.
There's no anything. Yeah, the bathrooms. The bathrooms reek of the recent performance of Billy Bean. That's
that's a drop.
I mean, I was watching. I was watching the game the Rangers A's game the other night, and they were pitching someone who I had never heard of in my entire life. And I can't I'm checking roster resource for his name because I can't even remember it.
It's something really weird, like Mengwen or something.
I actually know Mengden. Okay. I think it was a Ramos guy. I honestly can't even find him on roster resource anymore. They just have a blank spot in where his rotation spot was.
The mystery man of the Oakland A's.
Yeah, I mean, and that's bad. Not only should I know the majority of players in Major League Baseball, but I mean, this is a guy who's local to me. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area right next to Oakland. So I usually know their entire team, and I had no fucking clue who this guy was.
Yikes.
All right. Let's talk about something a little bit less funny. Scott, can you tell me why Jordan Zimmermann hates me?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he's running Kaiser Permanente. You're costing him a lot of money.
Because, I mean, this is a guy that, I was extremely high on kind of in his breakout season with the Nationals. Then I was extremely high on him last year. It disappointed me. I wasn't necessarily extremely high on him this year. But, you know, every time where I go, okay, this guy's starting to put it back together, he just shits the bed. Allows 6 runs the other day. Only 4 of them were earned against Eli's White Sox. But is he ever going to return kind of back to the guy we saw in Washington?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. He has good stretches, you know. But I've never liked Jordan Zimmermann because I'm a K-whore and he's never been a strikeout guy. He only has 49 through 78 this year, and that just disgusts me. His xFIP is way higher than his ERA. It's over a run higher. His ERA is 3.46. xFIP is 4.59. Part of that is because his April was so good. I think he was pitcher of the month in April, and he had a 0.55 ERA. He's way better on the road, 2.16 versus at home, 4.43. And the most disgusting thing to me is only 3 strikeouts apiece in his last 4 starts. That is just not going to get it done. If you're going to give up a bunch of runs, at least strike guys out. And he's not even doing that. So,
Chuck, are you on board with what Scott's talking about with Jordan Zimmermann? Or is there any glimmer of hope?
There's really not another way to paint it. I mean, with how his strikeouts have trended over the last couple years, I mean, all of his fantasy value right now is caught up in 9 wins, and he's been getting ridiculous run support, like the best run support in the American League. He has a 4.88 ERA. He had a 4.88 ERA in May, and it's a lot worse in June. There's a lot not to like right now about Jordan Zimmermann. I have no interest in him right now whatsoever.
Eli, any interest in Jordan Zimmermann going forward?
Man, you guys seem very butthurt about this. It's almost as if pitching in the National League is really advantageous for your fantasy numbers. Like I harp on this every podcast. It's so great. People still underrate how great it is to pitch in the National League. I still think he's got some value. I know the strikeouts are just embarrassingly terrible, but he's still on a good team. I know he hasn't pitched well at home, but Detroit's a good place to pitch. I think he's going to be turning around and be better. I'm not saying, like, you got to go get this guy because that's not the kind of pitcher he is, but I don't think he's going to hurt you the rest of the way.
Hey, Ricky Weeks just took Clayton Kershaw deep, just so you guys know.
That could not have happened.
That just happened.
Wow.
I could be living in a drug trip right now, but.
What do you always say, Eli? You hate baseball? Or baseball stupid?
It is. It really is, but it's the best thing of all time.
All right. I don't know what to do with my shares of Jordan Zimmermann right now. I mean, the fact that he's got less than 6 Ks per nine is just abysmal. I mean, at least his ERA is respectable. But one of the things you kind of always come to expect from Jordan Zimmermann is he usually is a huge whip asset, which he's not necessarily this year. Not that his whip numbers are awful, but they're just not the asset that the ratio assets that you kind of expect from him. I think he'll rebound a little bit, but I don't think the K numbers are necessarily coming up. He's a guy that you kind of got to hold and hope maybe puts together a few starts so you can sell him off. But right now I'm not necessarily extremely excited about him.
By the way, how terrible does that contract look long-term right now?
Yeah.
It looks pretty bad.
Long-term pitching contracts, you really do, though.
Yeah, when do they ever look good, honestly?
I mean, outside of Kershaw's and, Chris Scherzer, Scherzer's looks pretty decent, you know, right now, but that's, you know, still got, like, another decade left on it. And Chris Sales, yeah, but for the most part, you know, I mean, as great as Cueto has looked this year, and even Samardzija as good as he's looked this year, I'm just petrified of those contracts for the Giants.
Yeah, Greinke. Yeah, I'm with you. I think Greinke's been really, really good recently, but, you know, paying anybody $200 million can really hamstring your team if it doesn't turn out. So,
mm-hmm. Well, at least there's opt-outs for Greinke. I mean, you know, maybe he has, you know, a good couple years, and he goes, oh, I'm going to try to get one more big contract. But
I don't think so.
Probably not. The last guy we're going to talk about today is Whit Merrifield. And if you want to laugh, go listen to Paul Sporer's impression of Whit Merrifield, what he thinks Whit Merrifield sounds like on the Sleeper and Bust podcast. I think it was like last Friday's episode. It's absolutely hysterical. Definitely go check that out. But this is kind of a nobody that has emerged, a 27-year-old guy who's emerged for the Royals out of nowhere and is been pretty impressive in a short stint. In 23 games, 2 home runs, 3 stolen bases, a triple slash of .326, .340, .505. Scott, what are your thoughts and impressions on Whit Merrifield?
Well, I like him hitting number 2 in the Royals lineup ahead of Hosmer or Kane most days. He's a speed guy, you know, 32 last year. He had 16 in AAA before coming up this season. So, good speed option. You know, I want to know if you guys would rather have Whit Merrifield or Billy Burns for the rest of the year.
Merrifield, not close.
Not close. Wow.
I think it's got to be close, but I think I might go Merrifield because I feel like he's going to get playing time going forward.
Merrifield's hitting 50 points higher than Billy Burns' OBP. I don't know where all this optimism for Billy Burns comes.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily optimism. I think at some point, Merrifield probably crashes a little bit,
right?
You know,
yeah.
And then you know, I mean, he's got a .392 BABIP. I mean that those rates are coming down, and he's walking at a 2% clip. So, you know, there's, you know, not that
they're probably going to be pretty similar.
Yeah, Ned Yost doesn't always make the best lineup decisions, but I mean, if at some point the league catches up with him, I would assume, and I would hope that Billy Burns' numbers improve a little bit. So, I think I would take Burns rest of the way. Eli,
Burns, I'm abstaining. I'm abstaining.
You're abstaining.
Yep. I refuse.
You'd rather not play fantasy baseball than pick between Whit Merrifield and Billy Burns?
Yeah, I'd rather join your South American fantasy league or whatever the hell it is.
Central American.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I have no Chilean superstars on my team.
There's a non-zero chance that Whit Merrifield is one of those guys who just grew up in the minors. Because once he turned, you know, towards the end of his 24-year-old year into his 25-year-old season, all of a sudden, you know, the plate discipline got better. He started hitting well above 300 after that. There's a non-zero chance of that. I think there's a zero chance that Billy Burns is a productive MLB player, you know, almost ever again. So
yeah, I think I'm with Chuck actually on this.
I will take what little chance there is that Whit Merrifield is a legitimate major league player. He's playing some at third, some in the outfield, some at second base, which are, you know, which is better than what you get out of Burns just being an outfielder. I think you're grossly overestimating Billy Burns' potential on that horrible team. If you would rather have him than Merrifield, I'd much rather have Merrifield.
What if Billy Burns got traded somewhere? Like, what if he moved anywhere? Do you like him, or do you just not like his skill set? I mean, I know he plays for the A's now, which is hampering him. Yeah. I get that, but I mean, are you just saying he's not productive at all, or is it he's not productive because he's not that good this year and he plays for the A's?
Well, I really don't like the year that he's having or what I'm seeing in his numbers, and he kind of overachieved when he came to the big league. So I guess you could say that I don't like his skill set. Now, I would be mildly more interested if he went to, you know, a team that stole a lot and maybe hope for a little change of scenery bump of some kind or another, whether that even exists or not. I mean, then you're talking about something different. But, you know, as of right now, I mean, until Whit Merrifield, you know, shows me that he can't hit at all, the last 2.5-3 years he's hit, and I'm just not convinced that Billy Burns can hit. He can run, but I don't think he can hit.
Hey, he didn't hit well in Double A or Triple A. I don't know. It was a fluke what he did last year, to be honest.
Exactly. I mean, at least Merrifield was hitting when he got called up and had been hitting for, you know, more than a year. So, you know, it's not personal against Billy Burns. The A's have gotten a lot out of a guy that really wasn't a prospect at all, you know, and congratulations to him. It's just that perhaps Whit Merrifield is a late bloomer. I don't think anyone has any disillusionment that Billy Burns has any opportunity to become, you know, a top division and upper division regular.
I wholeheartedly agree with you with Merrifield for this season, for the fact that he's hitting two, and Yost has just left him at two. And that's what I want Bob Melvin to do with Billy Burns. But I don't agree with you with that Billy Burns has no long-term potential. I mean, you know, I kind of railed against contact percentage in my most recent podcast with the Welsh, but because it doesn't necessarily turn into anything as far as fantasy production goes. But I think Billy Burns being so high in contact percentage, I think something's going to start falling for him eventually. Whether it is prolonged success, I'm not 100%, but I think he'll have success at some point. So
I'm still taking Billy Burns rest of the season. And if Billy Burns, if you're out there listening, I really apologize for just the assault in your character, sir. I'm sure he listens to this podcast, but
yeah, I'm sure. It's the first thing
yeah, and he's probably back. Cutting himself for Whit Merrifield as we speak.
what's the chance Whit Merrifield makes the All-Star team this year?
Well, he's in Kansas City.
That's the only reason he has a chance.
I think a couple weeks ago he was like second in the voting on the American League second baseman.
Yeah, that Omar Infante contract looks really good too, by the way.
All right, well, that's going to wrap us up. Scott, why don't you tell people where you can reach again on Twitter, and then give yourself a few more plugs over in this league.
I am on the Twitter machine at Bogman Sports. We have baseball. We're, you know, deep in middle of the season. We are starting our football. We've got Mock Draft 2.0 coming out this week. We have college fantasy football shows, and we're going to have an NBA draft show pretty soon. So we've got you covered on everything you'd want to hear. So come give us a try, inthisleague.com.
Eli, tell people where you can reach and what you're working on.
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and be sure to check out our DFS shows on Tuesday with me and Friday with Mike Werner. And, of course, Cam hosts both of those shows.
And then, Chuck, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, which I enjoy a great deal. Other than that, I just basically prepare myself to be overly opinionated, sometimes reactionary on this podcast, which I think probably adds to the dialogue, so it's all good.
And then you can always reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read whatever I write for football right now on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. I've been putting out early ranks, just released my top 90 wide receivers for the 2016 season on Wednesday, I believe it was.
Where's Jamison Crowder?
I think he's like in the like low 70s.
Okay.
And then you can read my baseball stuff on fangraphs.com, their fantasy side, which is called Rotographs. And I think that's about all I've got going on. Yeah, football podcasts hopefully starting at the beginning of July, so definitely go over and listen to the In This League ones until we get started, and then even after we get started, because I'm sure we'll have those guys on our show as well. So for Scott, from the In This League Podcast Network, Eli, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
Boom.
Hey,
you guys hate the
on,
shit out of Billy Burns. God damn.
I just hate speed guys who don't run. Who aren't running.
Gotta
I don't
hit
like
first
that.
Or nothing. For,
no, I mean like
Ricky Bobby. You're first or you're last. That's it.
He's gotta learn how to walk, man. Like these players don't work unless you learn how to walk. They just don't.
What did he hit last year? Like 285?
294, like, I believe. But if you look at his minor league numbers, like you had to go back to like 2012 when he actually learned how to hit the ball. Like I know the steals were always there, but it's not going to
work. I was just really excited for a leadoff guy that was hitting in the 290s, who could score a bunch of runs and steal a bunch of pieces, and he's just super fucking disappointing. So I'm with you. Like when I started looking at this Whit Merrifield stuff, I was like, God damn, I think I'd rather have him than Billy Burns. So. I was like, I can't believe I'm saying that because I was so high.
I just can't pick someone named Merrifield over Billy Burns.
His whole first name is Whitley too, which I find odd. Reminds me of Chase Whitley though. His splash in the pan year for Chase Whitley when he was a Yankee.
I've never even actually seen Whit Merrifield play. So like I have no idea what he looks like, but I just imagine he like has a butler following him around. That's like the whitest name.
Which Merrifield?
he's 6 foot, about 200 pounds, so he's not a little guy.
Yeah, that has got to be that is one of the whitest names other than Milton Bradley, and he was one of like the blackest people in the world.
Would you rather have your name be Silverberry Mouton?
Oh, I totally want that name.
Everyone would know you. They'd just say Silverberry, and you'd know exactly who it was.
There goes old Silverberry. There he is. That is a real college football player's name, by the way. Silverberry Mouton.
Yeah, I have no idea who that is.
I don't know what team he plays for or what position he plays, but it was on one of those things, and I'm like, well, I'm just never going to forget this now. So his fucking name is Silverberry Mouton. It's a real thing.
I love you Google Whit Merrifield in, like, the also try – is Whit Merrifield girlfriend.
Well, he is a sexy man. So
it's got to be a hot girlfriend since we've heard of Whit Merrifield now for 2 weeks.
His girlfriend's always so, right? I mean...
Although I've noticed that almost every major league player that I Google, you get a girlfriend or something probably. That comes up.
He does look like a Whit Merrifield.
Yes, he does.
I mean, he literally looks like a Whit Merrifield.
Father sent me my haberdashery collection while I'm on the road. I don't know if that even makes sense.
I don't think it does.
even last year, Billy Burns' OBP wasn't that good, was it? Am I missing something?
I don't know. I clicked out of his page.
It was serviceable.
He walked more than he's walking now, I believe.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Just with those young players, you expect them to take a step forward, not a giant step backwards like Billy has. And I swear to God, it's partly because of Bob Melvin. You know, he used to do that with guys.
He didn't really walk that much either last year, 4.7% walk rate.
He dicks around with them too much.